Welcome to Quinn's Empowerment Hour on the BBS Radio Network, hosted by Quinn Leigh Erickson, psychotherapist, life coach, and inspirational speaker. Quinn's experience as a blind woman, a boat person from Vietnam, and a refugee has driven her to realize her dream to help you to become the best that you can be. So join Quinn every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, for an hour of insight and inspiration for your heart, your spirit, and your soul.
I am worthy.
Good evening. This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour with Quinn Leigh Erickson. Thank you for joining me tonight. You've just listened to a song called I Am Worthy by Yvette Narlock, and this is a theme song for the Save Teen program. And tonight we're going to talk about a topic that is very important for women and especially for young girls. We are going to be talking about sexual violence against women and girls. I'm very pleased to introduce to you a very special guest on the show tonight, Anita Roberts. And let me tell you a little bit about Anita Roberts. She has been working in the field of violence prevention and women's empowerment since 1976. She is the founder and guiding force behind the internationally acclaimed Save Teen program. Chosen as a Canadian representative on violence against women to the United Nations, Roberts is a visionary, power coach, and award-winning author. Her book, Save Teen, Powerful Alternatives to Violence, has been translated into Japanese and Chinese. Anita has traveled to 5 continents to empower women, train educators and parents, and to teach youth to hold their power and speak their truth. The mission of the Save Teen program is as follows. We aim to transform youth culture of social survival and fear into a culture of empowerment and safety in all schools. So for more information about the Safe Teen program, go to their website, safeteen.ca, or their Facebook page, facebook.com/safeteen.ca. And here is Anita Roberts. So Anita, thank you very much for taking your time to come on to my show today. I really appreciate a chance to speak with you.
You're so very welcome. I'm happy to be here.
And you know, I saw your TED Talk about 4 years ago, actually when I was preparing for my own TED Talk, and it really inspired me. And since then, I often shared your TED Talk with a number of the women that I work with. So I really appreciate a chance to speak with you today.
Yeah, well, that's lovely to hear. Thank you so much for saying that. I also watched your TED Talk and it was amazing.
Oh, well, thank you.
I was very moved by it.
Share with us what started your passion in empowering women and girls?
Well, that is definitely my passion. This will be 40 years in 2016 that I have been doing this work. It basically started with a self-defense class in my basement in 1973. I began teaching adult women how to defend themselves. But the truth is that this work actually started in my own childhood. So I am one child of six. We're all girls. My father was violent. And I was the witness of and the recipient of that violence. So I witnessed my mother and my sisters being hurt as well. Out of that, completely in my unconscious mind, I was somehow fascinated by martial arts. So if we fast forward to when I'm in my early 20s, I cannot get enough of learning how to fight back. And it's so interesting because in my mind, I had no clue that that had anything to do with my childhood issues. But now it's kind of obvious. And I was teaching adult women, and I learned pretty quickly in the first, you know, couple of years of doing those workshops for women that all these adult women already had so many stories. And when we looked at it, most of their stories happened when they were in their teenage years. And I realized that my work, I didn't want it to be about, you know, that last minute you're being attacked and you have to fight back. I wanted my work to be about prevention. And I realized I would have to work with teenagers in order for me to be able to prevent those situations from happening. And I began to develop this other aspect to the self-defense classes, which were based in karate and martial arts. I began to practice my own self in my own personal life, how to stand up for myself in a way that would de-escalate a potentially violent situation. And when we look at the statistics of violence against women, one in three women will be sexually assaulted in her lifetime. And the highest risk group, teenage girls, between 14 and 18. And I also had this experience myself when I was in that age group.
In your TED Talk, you talked quite a lot about your personal journey. What was it like for you as a child, growing up in a violent home?
Well, it was really traumatic. And, you know, the trauma, it wasn't over after, you know, we grew up and moved out. I mean, my sisters and I, we all have, you know, the residual effects of being, you know, witnessed to. And my younger two sisters actually weren't hit at all, but they witnessed a lot of it when they were really young. This kind of damage that happens when we're children, we bring that forward into our adult lives in one way or another. Through this unconscious journey where I was being drawn toward first the martial arts and then the prevention, this unconscious journey was my own spirit's desire to heal. So this work that I created for teenagers is simply a manifestation of my own spirit's desire to heal. It was not a conscious journey. I wasn't making conscious choices. I was just allowing myself to follow that calling. Joseph Campbell, who's, you know, a very famous social archaeologist, I guess, and mythologist, he coined the phrase, follow your bliss. And what he says, which I so resonate with, he says, there's this ancient word called marga, M-A-R-G-A, and it means the trail an animal leaves. He says, if you follow that trail, you will end up in the animal's den, and there you will meet your true self. So this unconscious journey, like a mole burrowing blindly in the dark, if you listen to your soul, which is mostly your intuition, and you just allow yourself to love what you love and follow that, you will end up doing the right thing with, I believe we'll end up doing the right thing with our lives. And for me, this has definitely been the right thing. And the thing about that trauma as a child, the thing about that is I was able to transform that wound into a healing force through the work. And I call this a transmutation. And that word transmute or transmutation is different from transformation. Here's the best way I can describe it. A lot of people don't know this, but when a caterpillar goes into a cocoon and it comes out as a butterfly, there is a complete disintegration of the caterpillar within that cocoon. It completely disintegrates, including its DNA. It disintegrates. And the butterfly comes out, but there's no DNA connection between the butterfly and the caterpillar. And that's the only place in nature where that happens. That is the metaphor that I use for what happened with all that trauma and damage that happened for me as a child, is I was able to, by following this, you know, calling, I was able to transform the damage into a healing force that has now touched 5 continents. We reach 25,000 youth a year just in the Lower Mainland. And by we, I mean the team of young people that go out and do the direct delivery of the skills that I developed, the model that I developed. They do the direct delivery to the teenagers in schools. So schools have made it part of curriculum.
That's very amazing and inspiring. What was it within you think that helped you to follow that trail? Because many of the women that I work with who experienced violence or traumas, especially sexual traumas, it's almost like they totally lost. They're not able to follow a certain trail or not able to hear their own inner voice or inner guidance. So what would you say to those women to help them to follow their bliss?
Yeah, I know it sounds kind of like, oh, just follow your bliss. But there, you know, there's a huge piece missing for women, all women, not even just women who are damaged as children, but this huge piece missing for women, this ability to listen to our own truth and listen to our own intuition. And in fact, the program that I created for girls and women, that's what I teach. Mm-hmm. I teach them that we all have a wise woman inside. And she has a voice. We don't listen to it because we're told, well, you're being paranoid, or that's not real, or that guy would never, you know him, he's a nice guy. So we deny our voice. In this work that I've created, we go through this process of helping these young women identify, and I work with adult women too, identify that voice of wisdom within. We call that persona wise woman. We also help the women identify the child self. Now, the child self is the part of us that is wounded, usually. It happened when we were younger, even really young. We have a child inside of us that needs tremendous amount of healing and care. And we also have what we call in our Safe Teen programs, the program's called Safe Teen, Powerful Alternatives to Violence. We also have this persona we call your inner bitch. So we have your inner child, and that's your fear and your wound. We have your inner bitch, and that's your very justifiable anger. The bitch is an incredibly important part of women, which our culture, our patriarchy and misogyny in that we're all raised in, denies us anger. You know, we're not allowed to be angry. Anger is considered a bad thing for girls and women. So we reclaim our right to this fierceness that we have inside. And the purpose of that inner bitch is to protect the inner child. So that is her whole reason for existing. And we love to say, honor your bitch, honor her, because that anger is there for a reason. And the energy of anger, mm-hmm. That's how we make change. Well, there's a science about this too. You know, anger and libido, like sexuality and creativity, passion, are all in the same place in the brain. So if we're repressing our anger, which women do, that takes a lot of energy, and we can't be surgically precise. We are repressing our creativity, our passion, our libido. I often say, you show me a woman who doesn't want to have sex, you're showing me an angry woman.
That's a very useful metaphor that I often use with my clients, to recognize their inner bitch and also the inner child, because all of us, we have fears and anxieties and worries, whether based on past experience or not. And also, all of us, we also have anger, and often that anger tells us that some kind of needs that we have that are not being met, or we're not being respected, or I'm feeling sexualized by a man, or whatever that might be. So I think it's a really useful metaphor.
It is actually, and one of the things that we talk about in the work that I've created is the purpose of anger, because we all have this emotion. We have all the emotions, and we're socialized as men and women. Men are allowed to be angry, but they're not allowed to be sad, for instance, or fearful. So the purpose of fear is, for instance, is pretty obvious. Fear exists so that we know when danger is present. Like, if you're standing on a railroad track and a train is coming and you don't experience fear, you're going to get run over. So it has a very distinct purpose. Anger's purpose is to tell us when we've been violated. So if we're not experiencing our anger, we don't have any boundaries. People will step over the line with us all the time, and we'll always be the person who goes home and says, "Oh my God, I can't believe I didn't say anything. I can't believe I didn't do anything." And then we feel like somehow it's our fault. Why didn't I fight him off? Why didn't I say no? Why did I go along with it? So the anger is a very necessary tool for women to have access to. The interesting thing also about anger is that we're teaching about anger. We're teaching also about wise woman. So we can resource the energy of our inner bitch, keep our child safe, and then the person who speaks for us is wise woman. So when we're standing up for ourselves, we're not coming across as angry at all. So can I give you an example of what wise woman would sound like?
Yes, I was going to ask you, give me
All
an
right.
example.
Okay, so let's do child first. So this is what we do, use role plays with the kids all the time. If you would participate in a role play with me, we could do this. So
Sure,
I
okay.
would ask you to be what we would call the creepy guy. And we also always talk to the young women about the world is full of good men. Actually, most men don't hurt women and children. That's a fact. But there's still lots of them who do. So if you're going to be the quote unquote creepy guy,
Okay.
then you would come up to me, stand too close, sit too close to me, maybe. If I were, a 15, 16-year-old girl, doesn't really matter how old I am, but that's the age we're working with. You might come up to me and say, "Whoa, looking good. Wow, hot stuff." And I'm going to respond first as child, and then I'm going to respond as bitch, and then I'm going to respond as wise woman. So we'll do it three times, okay? All right, go.
Wow, I really like you look very hot in that tight pants.
thanks. And that's child. She looks away, she smiles, and she says, "Thank you."
Sounds nervous.
She's
Hes
nervous,
hesitant.
and she, yes, and she also, she doesn't feel complimented. She feels afraid or anxious and violated even. So, but we're so socially trained as women to be nice and polite. And nobody teaches girls the difference between a compliment and an insult. So if anybody comments on our appearance at all, we're supposed to think that that's a compliment.
Yeah, and I think a lot of time us women, we're afraid if we say something, they say, I'm just giving you a compliment. Why you make such a big deal?
Exactly. So when we do the wise woman, I'll get you to say that part as well, so I can show you how wise woman would continue. Okay, so that was child. Now let's do another one. Just give me the exact same line, and I am going to respond as bitch.
You look very hot, lady.
Seriously, who do you think you are? You just come walking up to me and just like in my face telling me I'm hot. You know what? Never in a million years. Yuck.
Well, I'm just telling you, you're hot. Take it easy, man.
Yeah, well, screw you.
Wow.
What happens here is she thinks she's standing up for herself, but she's throwing fuel on the fire because the guy's usually bigger than we are and he's not afraid of us. So he has a response to that he feels very threatened, and he's never going to let a woman talk to him that way. And it can escalate into violence. And he gets more angry. And this is our greatest fear as girls and women, that if we do stand up for ourselves, the guy is going to get more angry and hurt us even more. Most of the time, when women do stand up for ourselves, it's like we take it and take it and take it, and we finally lose it, explode in
And they
anger.
find too that doing that way, they walk away, they don't necessarily respect you more. They will walk away, label you as a bitch. They don't see that what they just said was a problem.
Here's the thing, they don't necessarily walk away because when we get angry, they feel powerful. When we get afraid, they feel powerful. So both in both situations, he's going to be, yeah, you bitch, I gave you a compliment, and he's going to be in my face, and he's going to be escalating. And from there, with both child and bitch, an attack can happen. It can get physical really fast. Like I said, bitch throws fuel on the fire. We do want him to back off and walk away, and we don't want it to escalate. So that's where wise woman comes in. So shall we do that one?
So I really like how you look in that short skirt. It's very sexy legs.
I actually don't like the way you're talking to me.
Well, I'm just giving you a compliment. Take it easy.
Like I said, I don't like the way you're speaking to me. So the guy didn't say anything back. Because, and that's what happens. Like, what do you say to that? It doesn't make him more angry. He can't disagree with you. You can't say, oh, yes, you do. You're speaking your truth. And the whole time, my face is completely neutral, and I'm facing him, and my eye contact is steady. Not staring him down, not challenging at all, neutral, very calm and relaxed, just like my voice was. So I'm going inside into myself and asking myself, what is it? Exactly what is it that's going on that I don't feel good about, that I don't like? And then I'm just saying that, and I will repeat it up to three times if I have to. But usually by the second time, the guy, he might say, what a bitch, before he walks away. Who cares?
What you're describing, I think, is so relevant, not just for young girls, but for women too. I remember my mom was telling us this guy would sit quite close to her and would sort of stroke her arm. And at the time, she was young and being Asian, she just didn't want to be mean to him. But also, I think she was really afraid that he was going to say, you make a big deal about it. I'm not attracted to you. You misinterpreted that or something. So she didn't say anything about it. And yet, the whole time, every time she encountered him, she would be so stressed out and really uncomfortable.
Yes, and that thing that they do where they're like, what are you talking about? So we start to not trust ourselves. We go, okay, maybe I just like I made it up. Like maybe he wasn't. So I'm going to share with you, if you would like, this story about the first time I ever met my inner bitch, because that is what happened in the story when I was a teenager. So I used to babysit for this one particular family. I babysat quite a bit. I always had a creepy feeling about the dad, but I didn't know why. I just didn't, he didn't. It was that icky feeling. But he was super friendly, and he was a dad, and they went to church, and he was from a good family. I just ignored that creepy feeling. But one day, when he came to pick me up to go babysitting, I got in the car, and his fly was open. But it wasn't just that it was unzipped, his erect penis was there and fully visible. I froze. I looked out the window, turned my face away from him, looked out the window, and I had this thought, and I'm not kidding you, I remember the thought exactly. He doesn't know his penis is showing. Like, how absurd is that? But yeah, that's what I told myself, because he was a nice guy. He would never, wasn't listening. Then I babysat, and the mom drove me home. Usually he would pick me up and she'd drive me home. It was all good. Then I got a call a couple of weeks later to babysit again. I said, sure. I forgot. And that happens for us a lot. When something is very traumatic, we just forget. We go into denial, right? I just, la, 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 la. And I got in the car. Oh my God, there it is again. The toing, hello, Mr. Penis. I stared out the window and I was feeling really anxious. And then I said to myself, well, maybe the zipper on those pants is broken. I was trying so hard to stay in denial in my poor, terrified
So
brain.
that was your child. Okay.
Yes. And also my social, all my socialization to believe this could never happen to me. I'm a nice girl and he's a nice guy and he would never. I babysat, she drove me home, everything's fine. And then I get a call shortly after to babysit, but it's him calling me. Usually she would phone and set it up. But I said, yes, but I had a plan because I remembered this time. And here was my big plan. He drove up, I got to the car, and my plan was I'm going to look inside the car before I get in. And that's a good plan, right? And I did. I looked before I got in. And ta-ta-ling, hello, Mr. Penis, there it was again. And guess what I did? Most of the time, when I'm asking that question in a room full of women, they will say, you slammed the door and you walked away. No, I didn't. I got in the car. I got in the damn car. Like, what was that? This inability for me to actually be a leader in my own life. I was so socialized to follow and do what was expected of me. I just didn't know what to say. I mean, yes, I had a good plan, but then I couldn't follow through. I got in the car. I knew this was wrong. I knew it was scary, but I just didn't have that self-agency, the ability to just stop. Like, I didn't have the words. I couldn't look at him and say, your penis is showing. This is the third time. I'm not getting in the car. Don't ever phone me again. I just didn't have that. So I got in the car. We get to his house. I get out of the car, really, because I'm really uncomfortable. And I go to the door. And the door's locked, and that had never been the case before. And suddenly I realized he was standing right behind me, really close. And he reached around me and unlocked the door, and I pushed the door open to try to get away from him. I stepped into the hallway, and I knew something was wrong. It was way too quiet, and nobody was home. And I thought, I got to get out of here. I turned around. It was too late. This guy grabbed me. He threw me down on the floor. He climbed on top of me. And he was pinning me down, and he pulled at my shirt and tore it. I had this horrible experience, the worst experience of my life to this day. And that experience was realizing this was happening and reaching up into my own mind for an answer. What do I do? What do I do? This is really happening to me now. What do I do? And there was nothing there except for ignore him. Don't talk to strangers. So I'm panicking and reaching around for something to do, nothing there. And that feeling of panic and not being able to even know what to do was so horrible. But some part of my young teenage self was so disgusted and grossed out because he was trying to kiss me. And I kept throwing my face from side to side. At one point, he put his forearm on my throat to keep my face head still. Then I couldn't breathe. At that moment, something changed. And it changed, it was in my body. And what I felt was a rush of heat. Whew, it just shot up my body. My hand came up and tore the skin off his face. My little finger caught on his eyelid, and I can still, to this day, remember the feeling of his skin tearing. He got off me like now and rolled off and grabbed his face, and I got up and I was running out the door. And as I was running out the door, he said, you bitch. My eye, you bitch. And I'm pumping down the street, just running as fast as I can. And I'm thinking, bitch, yeah. And I was filled with this power and this adrenaline and this amazing feeling. I didn't know that there was somebody who lived in me that cared that much about me, that was willing to fight for me. I was willing to take his eye out, and I wasn't grossed out by it at all. And that inner fierceness, that's your inner bitch. She will fight for you. So we teach the girls a segment of self-defense, and the women a segment of self-defense. So that they know where to hit him and what with, if it comes down to that.
If you were in touch with your wise woman, what would you have done differently?
I wouldn't have gotten in the car. That's it. That's it.
Even after the first time?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, even maybe the first time, if I was fully in touch with my wise woman, I would have said, stop the car. I would have gotten out. And for sure, the second time, I wouldn't have babysat at all. I would have said no. And I would have said something. I would have said, your husband showed me his penis. And I'm never babysitting for you again. but certainly I wouldn't have gotten in the car. But when you're in that moment, you're being attacked, you need your bitch. That's the only time you ever need her. The rest of life, wise woman can handle. Child safe, back, bitch, back. So she's back there, and she's just keeping an eye on that child, and wise woman is here. And the phrase I use is, rise up inside yourself. If you feel it, face it. Psychologically and physically, face it. So you look at the guy and you speak.
That's very useful, you know, because all parts of us are important. They all serve some important functions. And so not to suppress anger, not to deny fear, and so to integrate all of those things into the wise woman that you talked about.
Yes, yeah, and this is the model that I created, the child, the bitch, and the wise woman. And this is the basis of the program. And we also, for instance, in the girls program, we also do girl-girl verbal violence, girls bullying, even aggression from other girls. We teach the basic model, and then through role plays, we apply it to anybody. It doesn't have to be a creepy guy. Anybody that you feel intimidated by, harassed by, put down by, you can child safe, bitch back, and hold your power, speak your truth. The other component of this skill I call coming from love. And what I mean by that is, if somebody tries to cause me harm verbally, or I'm talking about not physically, talking about bullying or any of those things, I will hold my power. I will speak my truth. And then while I'm speaking my truth, I'll very subtly just put my hand over my heart. And my inside voice says, may you be healthy and whole. So that's the energy I'm using. I'm not using trying to put the other person down. I'm not using trying to win, trying to have the last word, trying to, you know, that's not where I'm coming from. I'm coming from, may we all be healthy and whole. And I also apply this and teach the young women to apply this to their own selves. When we cause somebody else harm, and everybody does at some point in our lives, we do, we're human. If I cause somebody else harm and I feel guilty and bad about myself, I don't beat myself up. I put my hand on my heart and I say, Anita, may you be healthy and whole. So hold your power, speak your truth, come from
love. Sounds like a very powerful mantra.
Yes. It has been for me, and this is a skill that I carry with me every single day. And, you know, we've just done UBC has just done a study, and we're doing a bigger one now, but we did a piece of research 2 years ago on safe teen, long-term positive impact. UBC identified in the study that the program was able to actually shift the ability of young women from the child or the bitch behavior into that wise behavior. The girls were actually using the skills. Now, I've known that my whole life because, you know, I actually have people that work for me that took it when they were in grade 7 and grade 10, and they're now in their 30s and 40s. They've never forgotten it. It works, and now it's being empirically proven that it does. The other aspect, you know, of violence against women that almost nobody else is dealing with, well, here's what I've always said. Why is violence against women considered a women's issue? It's a man's issue. We're not educating our boys. Quinn, have you ever noticed, like, in the school shootings that we've had over the years, those mass shooting, they get a team of psychologists together and they analyze the kid and they know everything about him, his family of origin, his childhood, what he reads, what he watches, the video games, everything. We know everything about him. And they tend to say he's got some kind of mental illness, or, you know, the one thing that they don't ever talk about, and this has been driving me crazy for years, they never, ever say this. All of them are men. They're all males. There's not been one single mass shooting by a woman that I know of. So why aren't they identifying the maleness? Not saying men are intrinsically bad or evil. I'm saying they're being socialized. They're being socialized. This culture, it's not just North American culture, but cultures all over the world. We don't give boys full access to their full humanity. They are not allowed their grief and they're not allowed their fear. What the heck are they supposed to do if they have no grief and no fear? They're going to be just angry.
And that's why I love how you have programs for the boys as well, to kind of start from, like you said, prevention, start from the young and teaching them how to be respectful to all people, women and men.
Yes, and with the guys, we're teaching them in the boys program. Now I have a team of young people that go out and they do the work with the youth, right? So we got these really cool, really awesome young men. They're in their, mid-20s to mid-30s, that age group. They bring the young men, we're working in a classroom, right? We're going right into the schools, right into the curriculum, and working with a room of 30 boys. They're 14, 15, or 16 years old, that age group. We also have a Safe Kids program for the 5 to 8 year olds. Yeah, and we have a preteen program too, working with them really young. These guys go in there with these young men. They teach them through role plays. The model for the boys program is your fear side, your fighter side, and your solid side. The term for wise woman is, for the guys, is solid, being solid. And they teach them how to stand down from a fight with another guy without leaving their dignity behind. And they were teaching them what sexual consent is, approaching it from the point of view, you guys really need to know this because you could be breaking the law. So we're no blaming, no shaming at all. The boys love the program. They laugh a lot. It's the way we approach it. What we do is we create safety in the room. For instance, if you're interested, I tell you one exercise we do in the boys program. The male facilitator will hand out a piece of paper and pencil. So everybody's got the same paper and the same pencils. They ask them to rank on this piece of paper in like in rank order of importance to them, what they most want from an intimate relationship. They write down 1, 2, 3, and 4, with the most important being on the top. And then they fold the piece of paper up. It's anonymous. There are no names on it. And they give it back to the facilitator. He shuffles them all up and then he hands them back out. They're all folded. Everybody's now got somebody else's paper. And then he says, before you open it, I want you to predict what will be number one on the list. And the boys almost always predict sex. They say, yeah, everybody just will write sex as number one. And he says, okay, open the papers. One or two in a group of 30 will say sex. The rest of them, number one is trust, love, someone to be with. They are so lonely. Boys are so lonely for connection. The only way they think they can get it is through sex. But what they really want is just to be connected. They want the same things from an intimate relationship as girls do. Once they've revealed that in that room, those boys can never walk down the hall of that school and say, yeah, I got laid on the weekend. Yeah, it was pretty hot. They can't do that with each other anymore because now they all know that they all want the same thing.
It's really powerful work, Anita.
It's so beautiful.
And then just apply to men just as much.
Yes, well, it's different for the men because we're not, I mean, men do get beaten up. Little boys do get sexually abused. It's a lot less than what happens with women, but it does happen. Here's how we explain the core difference between, because some people say, oh, this violence against women, it's anti-male, and men get raped too. So here's the metaphor that we use to respond to that. And we end every single girls' workshop with this piece. Imagine that this teenage girl, her best friend stole her boyfriend. She failed an exam. She got home. Her parents were fighting. She just gets out of the house. She can't stand it. She's just so upset. She meets up with somebody and they go to a party, but somehow she loses her friend along the way. She gets to the party. It's all guys. She's at the wrong party, but she's been drinking already. She goes in and she walks in. All these guys are like really happy to see her. It's like a stag. And she's so loaded and they're encouraging her. And she just gets up and she starts, doing a little dance, sexy dance. And she's up on the table and she's taking her clothes off. She's just completely out of it. Now, what we ask the girls to do is, I want you to imagine that in that room, all the good men that we talked about at the beginning of the workshop, the good men are in that room, not one creepy guy in the room. What happens?
She will be safe, right? Nothing will happen to her.
Yes, she'll be protected. So let's do it again. Girl, terrible things happen. Goes to a party, she's drinking, she walks in, she's up there on the table, taking her clothes off, she's completely out of it. And the room is full of creepy guys, not one good man in the room. What happens to her? What is the difference between those two stories? There's only one. The only difference is the men. So then we ask the women, take a deep breath, inhale, and take this in to the very core of your being. If there's no rapist in the room, there is no rape. If there's no rapist in the room, there is no rape. It wasn't your fault. Whatever happened to you, if it has happened or ever does happen to you, I don't care what you wore, I don't care what you drank, I don't care what your behavior was. You may have been asking for help. You were not asking to be hurt, and it wasn't your fault. And this is, I think, we talked in the early part of this interview about children and the damage from when they were children and the work with and how they can't, you know, it's like they can't grow out of it. They can't change that. The thing, you know, the violation in and of itself, whatever the violation was, that's wounding. But the thing that compounds that wound for our whole lifetimes is that belief that is so deeply rooted in us that we were to blame.
And the self-blame is so, that's one of the things that I often see in the women I provide counseling, the self-blame. And not just that, even the society blames. I really appreciate how in your book you talked about the difference between not your fault and maybe she did make some unwise
that's choices.
Right. Can you talk more about that?
So, you know, developmentally, children and then teenagers, we go through so many phases, right? So adolescence, this is a time of stepping away from our authorities in our lives and trying to find our own way. Teenagers individuate. It's necessary for teenagers to go out and try things and learn for themselves. So this is developmentally exactly what the teenagers are supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be trying things and they're supposed to make mistakes and learn from them. If we lived in a world that was safe, that didn't socialize men to abuse, rape, and kill women, we would be safe. We would be able, these girls would be able to make mistakes and they would be protected instead of predated on. So men have been socialized in two very distinct streams, to be a predator or be a protector. And what we are teaching in the boys program is for them to identify with the protector within themselves and to choose that because in the boys program, we call it the power of choice, to choose what kind of man they want to be. And every man has that choice. We make it really clear for them so they can begin to choose behaviors that actually mean that they're a good man. That piece of self-blame, that is, I think that becomes the lifelong wound. The other thing, the violation, whatever it was, I believe we can heal from that. I know we can. And we end up stronger in that broken place. The self-harming practice that we actually perpetrate on ourselves, that we were at fault, that's what keeps us stuck in the wound. That's what I believe.
Before we end here today, what would you like to tell women who may have experienced sexual trauma and they really still struggling in the healing journey?
Well, that's a perfect question, Quinn, because we end every single program with this, with that. This is what we end with, and it will speak directly to that. So what we say is, if anything like this has ever happened to you, or ever does happen to you, it's really important to tell your story. You need to get your story out. One teenage girl said, I went out into a field and I told a flower. Does that help? Yes, it does. And so many girls have said to me, I told my teddy, I told my cat, I told my dog, I told my dolly. Does that help? Yes, it does. Write it down. Write it down. And at some point, when you find a safe person and you have the courage, take that story and share it with somebody that will help you move through it. If we don't share our stories, they become toxic within us and they can cause so much harm, not just to our mental health, emotional health, but our physical health. It's like a poison within our system and we need to get it out and actually speaking it, writing it, talking about it, to continue to talk about it and write about it until you know it's clear. and you're free of it. And I'll tell you this, girls and women heal from these kinds of things all the time. We live fully rich, beautiful lives and have amazing relationships. It's not going to heal. It's not going to go away if you don't get it out. So tell your story and know it's not your fault.
Thank you very much, Anita. And that was a very powerful conversation.
I really appreciate the interview. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to speak about my greatest passion, this work.
You just listened to an interview with Anita Roberts, who is the founder of the internationally acclaimed Safe Teen program. For more information, go to their website, safeteen.ca, or their Facebook page, safeteen.ca. So facebook.com/safeteen.ca. And now I want to share with you a clip that features a date rape story. And I think this is a topic that often the victims and obviously the survivors, it's very difficult for them to have sympathy and understanding from society, because often people blame, what did she wear on that day? What did she do? Why did she talk to him? Why did she go into his car? On and on. And here is her story.
It started out as any other night out. Kat Jones joined some people she knew at a bar.
You know, he bought me a drink, and I noticed, you know, 20 minutes later, about 20 minutes later, after a few songs, that I just really didn't start feeling, I was feeling really sick. And then after like a while, I just was out like a light, and I don't remember, you know, anything until I woke up the next day.
That was May of 2009. Since then, flashbacks have started filling in some of the blanks.
I don't like mud anymore because, like, on my way home from, well, not on my way home, but when he was taking me home, I asked to go to the bathroom and he wouldn't let me go to a public place. He made me go on the side of the interstate, like, on this big muddy pile. And so I just woke up. I was just really dizzy. I didn't have any clothes on. And so I had to, like go through mail to figure out where I was at. And once I figured out where I was at, I got my clothes and got out of there.
She called for her sister to come get her at a nearby shopping center and tried to process what happened.
I was embarrassed that that happened to me. I was embarrassed that I just didn't, it was kind of like a, there was this time that I was just.
Kat joins a staggering statistic in Nebraska. An estimated 1 in 8 women are raped in this state, and 3/4 of them are sexually assaulted by someone they know. Add to that, more than half of the women never report it.
One of the biggest reasons someone doesn't come forward is no one's going to believe me. And that's a huge hurdle to get over.
It takes a lot of strength to do this. It really does. It's not a weak person who goes to trial. It's not a weak person or who like will report it.
Kat's decision to report it to police, she calls the right thing to do. And she keeps the bracelet from the hospital that day as a reminder.
For me, it's a symbol of strength. It was like a choice whether or not to go to the hospital or not, and I did.
She would need that strength to go through the trial as her actions and behavior went under the microscope.
Your life is kind of ripped open for like anybody to see, and it can get kind of, it's kind of scary. It's, you know, it's very, it's a huge invasion of privacy.
As a society, we're so used to looking at that victim and what she was wearing and what she was doing in the position that she was in, as opposed to what actually happened to her.
Prosecutor Julie Medina admits winning an acquaintance rape case is an uphill battle. Only about a third of accused rapists get convicted.
There's such a misconception, even in 2011, about what this crime is about. And make no mistake, this is a crime of power. This is a crime of control. It has absolutely nothing to do with sex.
This is something that not very many people talk about. It's very hush-hush, and I think that is a reason why, you know, people aren't convicted.
A jury acquitted the man in Kat's case, too. The whole experience has left its mark. She's lost 30 pounds, changed her hair color, and sticks close to home.
I went out for my birthday about a month ago and saw people I used to work with who had no idea who I was. And it made, I don't know, it made me pretty sad because, like, it's hard for me to talk about this with, like, absolutely, like, everyone. And they don't know what happened, and they don't know like what made the change. But
she's scarred, scared at times, but also incredibly strong, determined to stand up as a rape survivor and encourage other women to step forward.
It's a crime, just like murder or, you know, robbery. It's a crime. You don't hide those crimes from people because you feel like you did something wrong. You did nothing wrong. Nothing. Tell someone.
She hopes her story will protect other women and stop the shame.
For her to have the strength and the courage to stand up and talk to people, I think it will make a huge difference in people's lives.
I think it's like the bravest thing I've ever done. And it could be the bravest thing that someone else has ever done before, too.
Tell me it gets better, it gets better in time. You say I pull myself together, pull it together, you'll be fine. Tell me what the hell do you know, what do you know? Tell me how the hell could you know? Hold your head up and be strong. 'Cause when you fall, you gotta get up. You gotta get up and move on. Tell me how the hell can you talk? How can you talk? 'Cause until you walk where I walk, it's just no talk.
You just listened to Till It Happens to You by Lady Gaga. And in an interview with Howard Stern, Lady Gaga disclosed that she was sexually assaulted when she was 19 years old by her manager or her boss. And it was very painful for her. It took her a long time to disclose something like that. Let me tell you a story that I recently heard of, actually just a few days ago. So you can see how easy it is for sexual violence to happen to women. So we have a homestay student living with us, and she's from Japan. She told us about something that happened to her friend just this past week. So her friend in her school was working at an ethnic restaurant in town, in Powell River here, and it's a small town. One day she finished work late, and the owner of the restaurant offered to drive her home. And rather than driving her home, he drove her to his house. So that was not her consent. And if you could imagine how scared she must have been, because she could barely speak English. My husband saw her at the restaurant when he went to that restaurant before, and he recalled that, you know, she really had a hard time with English, and she was new in town, so didn't know much about town, and probably didn't even have a phone. And so, she, you know, being Asian and shy, She was very nervous, but she didn't want to upset him, so she went into his house. And soon after that, he started to touch her and kiss on her mouth. So the girl started to panic, and she asked him to take her home. I mean, I don't know the details of the story, but apparently he pretended to call a taxi for her. But she waited for an hour, and the taxi never came. And I don't know how much he, you know, was harassing her. So finally, she had to walk home. And it was late at night in a small town. So in Powell River, you know, by 8 or 9 o'clock at night, it's pretty quiet here. And if you could imagine something like that happened to you, or even to your daughter, to your sister, to your friend. Now, fortunately, he did not force intercourse on her. He touched her and kissed her on the mouth. But, you know, it was very traumatic for her. And now, fortunately, when she came home late and she was upset, her host family asked her, and she told the host family, and she was able to report to the college, and I guess the police got involved. So good for her. But, you know, she told my homestay student that she couldn't tell something like this to her family or her boyfriend back home. So that's something that, you know, very scary. It could have been way, way worse. And, you know, who knows? She probably would be quite traumatized still. So that's thank you for listening to my show tonight. This is Quinlay Erickson, and this is Quinn's Empowerment Hour. Listen to me again in 2 Saturdays from now, December 26th, and we'll talk about exceptional living with Allison Jones. So I'm signing off here, and you have a very good night. Bye-bye. This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour, hosted by Quinlay Erickson, every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. For more information about Quinn, visit www.quinle.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and you have a beautiful, restful sleep. Good night.